Schooling is one of the few experiences majority of Americans share. Yet how much do we really know what goes on behind the scene? And what's up with cafeteria lunches? I team up with developmental psychologist David Yeager to explore the personal side of education by speaking with superintendents. I'm Andrew Kim, and I consider myself an accidental superintendent for the past 15 years. So grab your lunch money and welcome to Lunch Duty. So welcome to Lunch Duty, Dr. Tiffany Spicer. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, listen, it's been a while, but man, I've been a big fan of yours back in the Round Rock days. You're a young, up-and-coming educator, administrator, and your name has been just all over, and followed your career here and there, watching you successful at places that are in many ways challengeful. And now you are at the top of the top at Buena ISD. So I'm so glad to have you on this Lunch Duty podcast.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for having me. I'm truly honored, blessed, and I never even thought my career would be this way. I just wanted to end up as a high school principal. That was the peak of my career for me initially. So it's kind of unique and kind of funny how things kind of turn out for me.
You know, that's funny you say that because when I was coming up through the ranks, I was coming up through the Dallas ISD ranks, and my greatest desire was to become the principal of North Dallas High School near downtown Dallas. Okay. That was my, I told myself, if I became the high school principal, that was it. And so what got you to move from that level to the superintendency then?
Well, and it's funny you ask. So again, I'm kind of minding my own business and I had a plan. I'm going to teach for this long. I'm going to be administrator. I'm going to get my high school. But then I was in Round Rock at the time, matter of fact, and there was not a, we had five high schools at the time, I remember, and nothing was open. And so I had the opportunity to be an administrator at Cedar Ridge High School in Round Rock and open that campus with Danny Presley. And our feeder school, Ridgeview Middle School, it was open. And I had started there as a teacher like 9 years ago, right? And so I'm just like, I don't want to be a principal of middle school. You know, you kind of go back and forth. But I applied, got the job, and I was like, okay, this is great, you know? So doing the work, and then one of my mentors was like, hey, we might have a high school open over here, and I know you like high school. And, you know, everything kind of just fell in place. But as I was doing that, I had some great superintendents who said, you're going to be a superintendent. And I said, I am not. That was a conversation. And so, but before I left Round Rock, Dr. Flores, he said, you're going to be a superintendent. I was like, no, I'm good. He hooked me up and connected me with Dr. Goffney. She was like, you need to go to TASB. I'm like, what's that? You know, I go, I meet people and they have their pipeline and I'm, you know, learning and asking questions. And then when I got to Leander at the time, Dr. Champion, he was like, okay, finish school because I'm working my doctorate at that time. And then Dr. Talks became the superintendent. He goes, I heard you want to be a superintendent. Well, we got to get you to administration. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm good. Like, you know, so I think I'm doing the work. And people are seeing my work. And I think it kind of spoke, it spoke and kind of went before me. So that was like a blessing in disguise where people saw it in me even when I didn't see it in myself. And so everything kind of just kept falling into place where just different opportunities at the admin level of central office. And then I had one, this is the best story ever. I go to TASA Midwinter and... one of the guys, rival high school people. He's in Georgetown. I'm in Leander. And he goes, Spicer, why aren't you a superintendent yet? And I was like, because I'm doing my job, you know. So he literally made a phone call and he introduced me to a recruiter. He says, you have an appointment at 2:00. I said, for what? And sure enough, I had the opportunity to meet with a recruiter. Oh, I can't make this stuff up. My life has been just uniquely crazy, but it's a blessed kind of crazy.
Wow.
And I met with the recruiter, and I had an interview. I submitted it that Friday, got the call the next week. I went on my first interview ever. I didn't get it, but just to have that experience and exposure, and at that point, I was like, I know I can do this. You know what I mean? It wasn't on the list of things Tiffany wanted to do, but it opened the door and I kind of got to see and experience like this. I can do this. You know, I'm made for this. And so a few years later, I applied and I got my first superintendent job. And it's been great. It's been a blessing. And I feel like my purpose is to change the world. I've said that from day one. And like that means one person at a time, one system at a time, one child at a time, one teacher at a time, one parent, one community member at a time. So I think we're making the gains to make the world a better place. And I just believe in it. And that's what I get to do every day. So, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. It really is. And, you know, that sounds like a beautiful song, by the way. You should write that down. You know, I wonder looking backwards now, because you're so reflective about who you are and your career. Is there something that you can say looking back at the younger you at that time period that, I guess I gave off this energy that people were recognizing that got me the jobs and the networking? Is there something that you can say that about yourself, about the younger yourself back then, you think? I mean, I know that sounds like, I'm not trying to say that you're arrogant enough to say that this is who I am. I'm just saying reflection in looking backwards. Can you describe that person to me or to others who are listening to this?
I think, and that's a great question because I've never been asked just to kind of sit back and kind of take a introspective look on my past. I think I've always been that person who wanted to lead. Now, I might not have been the leader, but I think about my time. So growing up in church, my dad was a pastor, and we were military, so we moved a lot. But wherever I went, I was the choir director. I taught kids at church, you know, Wednesday night Bible study. So I was always doing something to where I was leading and pouring into, I'll say, youth, right? And so not knowing that that was like, I'll say, a precursor to what I'd be when I, in quotes, grow up, right? And so I think like every position I had, and I tell myself this, but I tell my staff, I don't say the Jesus part, but I say, do everything as unto the Lord. That's something that's a personal belief. You know, everybody has their own faith belief. I get it. I respect it. But for Tiffany, do everything as unto the Lord. And so my thing, I say, do everything in excellence. And so I've tried to make sure that my personal, my professional, relational, all the different parts of my life, spiritual, financial, is done in excellence. And so I think by trying to live up to that standard, I've been able to attract maybe different positions or opportunities or even people who say, you know what, I got my eye on you and I need to talk to you because I see something for you. And even my mentees and people that I have a chance to pour into, I tell them, I said, let me tell you something. You're always interviewing, even you don't know it. You could be at the grocery store somebody sees you and they say, you know what, there's something in her or there's something in him, right? And so I think for me, I'm just like, I got to be excellent all I do because I got one life. I have one opportunity to make a difference. And so I take what I do and what I believe very seriously. And I think it kind of comes out in my actions, whether I'm just talking or reading or at a campus walking around or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It does. It does. I'm wondering, you know, talking about your background, growing up so in the public eye, you know, your dad being a pastor, you know, in front of others and in service of others. I wonder if you felt natural to be in front of people, to be able to, you know, not be bashful about sort of exuding your great smile, your personality. You know, do you think that was helpful? I mean, growing up?
I think so because, okay, so I just finished the Dr. Bob Thompson Leadership Academy for Superintendents, right? And so he made us do that inventory. And people are going to be the people know, but they're going to be like, it's not true. So in the inventory, it talked about me being an introvert. And I kind of am. Like on the weekends and like when I'm not at work, I can tell you, I can just be by myself and I'm okay. Like I'm that person. But when I'm at work and my kids are expecting to see my smile and they're ready to go and like, oh my gosh, give me a hug. How are you? And all those different things, I'm on. You know, so I think it's been my experience just church, the choir director. I got to know everybody's part. I got to lead them. I got to make sure the music's on point. I got to make sure all the vocals on point. I got to make sure the congregation likes the song. Like, it's always kind of been a part of my world. And so I think just all those different experiences have led themselves to here. And so, like, when I'm at work, I'm at work. And my work is me giving to people, pouring into people, leading people, trying to help them maneuver. So I think it's been in me. It has to be pulled out when it's time. But when I'm not, and it's just Tiffany and Dr. Spicer, I'm just quiet to myself. I can read a book for 2 days. And not be bothered, right?
I like to think of myself as, that quiet time was always something that I always appreciated, you know, because the job is so hard. And I think we naturally, default to that, you know, in many ways, because you are in the public eye, you are on all the time. Like you said, you ring interviewed all the time. You know, when you work with your staff, especially now as a superintendent, how do you go about ensuring that they get Tiffany or do they get Dr. Spicer? How does that work? You know, how do you make that work?
Well, I think there's a mixture and a balance. So people need to know that you are a real person, but they also need to, I'll say, respect the position, right? And so that's kind of how I operate. And so when I first got here, so it's my first superintendency, and I'm taking notes from all my friends, mentors, and everybody who's kind of done it already. And so some of the things I've learned, some people are just like, I'm just very straight to the point, business, you call me doctor, whatever, right? And some people are very, I'll say first name, very familiar. So I think I have a balance, like, I'm Dr. Spicer here. Behind closed doors with some people, I could be Tiffany. But when I go to campuses, like I had some meetings. I went to all the campuses. I went to the different departments. And I was just very, I'll say, transparent and vulnerable. I said, these are my priorities. Let me just tell you a little bit about me. My faith is first and foremost. Yeah. My family is second. And what I mean by that, if something happens and my family calls, I'm going to go take care of my family. Yep. I will leave right now to go do that. And then I said, my health is third. I'm going to exercise every morning. I take care of myself. I do me because I also expect you to do you.
Good for you.
Right. And then I said, fourth is my career. So I said, it's not to be disrespectful. I said, but I need you to know these are my priorities. And I said that to the board in my interview. I said that to the staff after I got the job because I think they need to know this is where I stand. But what it also did, it gave permission for everyone else to put their priorities in order. And so now, I had some staffers like, they're like, okay, so I went for a walk. And I was like, good job. Or I'm drinking my water. I'm like, great job. You know, so things I think that people think like, I don't have time. Yes, you do. When it's time to go, you need to shut it down. The work will be there. You know, so kind of modeling my expectations, but giving permission, you know? Yeah.
You know, it's so interesting and insightful you say that. And I'm wondering, because we're in the business of educating children, it's a 24-hour, seven-day job, if you think about it.
Yes.
You know, teachers get 20 minutes of lunchtime, maybe, you know, and it's, also restroom breaks. Think about that, right? I mean, if you think about it from that perspective, it's hard for us, I think. Do you think we feel guilty or some level of guilt about taking some personal time, you know, to take a walk in the middle of the day? And so I think you giving permission to your staff is that's really good to do that. I mean, and I'm wondering, as a result of that, are you getting more buy-in from them about other things that you got to work on and the things that you do have to tackle on a day-to-day basis?
Absolutely. I believe so. I believe that they know I'm a real person. And I think sometimes when you have leaders, people think they're untouchable, they're not real, like they're always happy. Like, you know, and I smile 90% of the time, even 95% of the time, I have a smile. Even on a bad day, I believe it's a good day because I'm above ground, right? And so I think that because I took the time and still take the time to show my vulnerability in some areas, not all, I think they know that she's a real person. And so, like, I had somebody, you know, they have a sick child right now. We talked last night, and I said, listen, go be a parent. The job will be here. We will be here. You go now. Right. End of discussion. Right. Like, that was the conversation. And so I think that we have to keep our priorities in check, but also give people the opportunity to keep theirs in check, even if they're not. Because life is short. Yeah. I've had students die. I've had parents die. I've had, you know, I've had life happen. And you can't get that back.
Sure.
And the crazy thing I tell my, I told my staff this and called me crazy, but I told them, I said, listen, I said, I think I'm doing a great job. I think you think I'm doing a great job. I said, but if I die today, y'all might cry for one day, maybe two, but then you're going to post the job. Superintendent of Buena ISD, we need one, right? And so it's the reality. So I know I'm replaceable. And so I also know I have to take care of myself. And so I'm, and I tell them, I said, if I'm replaceable, you are too. So let's do right. Let's do right by each other. And then let's do right by our kids and our families and get the job done. You know, so I think it's that balance, but giving that permission and validation when people do need to take care of themselves or their families.
There's a Latin phrase that's translated to all glory is fleeting. And so, and the notion that, unfortunately, that, you know, I know that sometimes we appreciate the level and the status that we have, but it really is short-lived. And it's really not, it's not what makes happiness come alive, I think, is what you're trying to point out there. I'm wondering, Tiffany, when you look for staff members, perhaps to add on to your staff, are you looking for, because you are so, you know, cognizant about this notion of the person and the individual, I'm wondering, are you looking for that person from a status of that who brings to the table that fits in from that aspect of it? Or are you looking for skill sets? How are you prioritizing when you look for a person to, you know, work for you or to hire on perhaps? You know, how are you thinking about that?
That's a great question. For me, you have to love kids, and it's not something you say, but I hear it in your responses. When I'm fortunate enough to know of the person or seen or have seen their work, that makes it better because I can see that their words and their actions line up. That's important for me. When it's like a cold interview and you have just people coming to the table, I kind of listen to see if their responses are student-focused. That's important to me. I can teach you how to do the job. I need to know where your heart and your loyalty lies. That's important. If I know that you're passionate about kids and you're passionate about making a difference and changing generations and lives, you're my woman, you're my man. Let's go. If it's me, myself, and I, and yes, I know my curriculum, that does not wow me. Because I can teach anybody curriculum. I can't teach you how to have a passion for children or for people, right? And so that's kind of some of the qualities I look for. And then if they come out, just, you know, I'm just like, okay, now I got that part of the way. Now let's talk business. So let's talk about this skill, you know, and then we kind of get into that work. But that's kind of where I start as a foundation, because if I got that, we can shape the rest and we can build the rest. And I think that's one of the things we've done here to build our team and kind of strengthen our team so that we have the right people in the right seats to make sure even the climate and culture, as the academics shift and our instruction and our processes and our system shift, so does the environment shift in a positive manner too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think in all of that is rooted in your faith, in my personal opinion of you. You know, you're strong in that. And sounds like, and you know, obviously listening to you talk here today and earlier, that your upbringing, especially you know, upbringing with strong faith in your family, must have had a huge influence. So where did you grow up? And let's talk more about your dad and your mom and all that good stuff. So now, where'd you grow up now?
Well, military. So I claimed the USA. I was born in Texas, so everybody thinks I'm from Texas, but I'm kind of not. I was born in Bryan, College Station, back in the 70s, and we moved, I'll say about every 4 years. So after Bryan, we were in California. After California, came to Austin. I went to AISD schools for a little bit, and then after Austin, we moved to Virginia. I lived in Hampton. We lived on base, wow. And I went to three middle schools. That was a crazy part of my life. And then after Virginia, went to New Mexico, Albuquerque, and I graduated high school from wow. there. So I claim, depending on who I'm with and what we're talking about, I'll claim the West Coast, sometimes the East, sometimes South. I can't claim North, but that's kind of like my little journey. So I think the cool thing about that is I got to meet people, and I still have friends in almost all of those places, even in my late 40s, right? And so that's kind of cool for me. But I also have it was my mom, my dad, me and my brother. And so us four, we're tight, you know, but we have a very big family in Texas. Like my dad had 9 siblings. His mom had 14 siblings. So we have a very big, big, big family. But that core unit with mom and dad and my brother, that was priceless. And just moving around different places in the country, you're tight because that's all you got. You start, you cry because you're leaving somewhere, and then you go somewhere new and you start over, and it's like that cycle. But we had our core unit.
I'm wondering if that strengthened your perchance to move to a new place without fear as a result of that, or try new things as a new challenge because of the fact that you experienced so much growing up of those changes, that for you, change is really abnormal. You say that?
Right. Oh, definitely. I think people have a hard time sometimes, and that's a very general term, with change or with moving. We moved a lot. And yes, I cried every time we left. I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't want to leave my friends, start all over, all those different things a little teenage girl does. But then I got there, made new friends, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to leave, and it's a repeat, But I think I had exposure to all kinds of people. So living on the military bases, we were white, we were black, we were Asian, we were Hispanic, we were everything, right? And so you got to meet all kinds of people racially, ethnically, everything. And so I've had exposure and experience just with people. And I think that makes me a person who I value people, and I value people's differences. And I appreciate it because you can teach me something that I might not know or have experienced. And so I think that kind of gives me almost a head start, but a little bit of advantage than some other people might have,
Well, it comes out, whenever I've heard you speak in the past, obviously, even in this podcast right here, a sense of who you are just exudes. And I can see now where that comes from. The inner strength really shines out. And I'm not just saying that.
Thank you.
So I'm really appreciative that you're sharing those. And my understanding, of course, is that faith was sort of the common denominator, as well as family, during those changes. And now, as you think about the superintendency and having done this job now, what's a common is obviously the faith and family are still a common denominator for you. Is there anything else, though, in the superintendency that you've learned that becomes a common denominator for you now beyond those two things? Or is that those things have been more strengthened as a result of the superintendency?
I think they've been strengthened, those two, for sure. But I also think self-care and my health has kind of risen up to a high number 3 because I've seen some of my peers who are superintendents, and even those who aren't superintendents, get stressed by the work.
Yeah.
Education, for those who are not in education, they don't understand my perception. They don't understand what we do. They don't understand the tolls.
Yeah.
They don't understand the negative, crazy social media that comes with the job, or the political conversations or political schemes that are going on with, politics in and outside of education. So I think I had to make sure that I took and continue to take care of myself on the job. And as I kind of shared with you before, it's like I've seen superintendent friends and colleagues who poor health or gained a lot of weight or deaths or just do the job to where that's all they do, and they lost their marriage, they lost their children and those different things. And so I'm not to say that I'm perfect. Along the journey, like when I was high school principal, I gained a lot of weight. Like, that's the true story. If you look at my pictures, go to my Twitter, you can see my face just swole, right? And so I gained a lot of weight and I'm working my district. Don't you dare look. But like, I kind of came to a point to where something happened to my dad, his physical health. It's been like 7 or 8 years though. He had a heart attack and a stroke the same year. And he's healthy. And I'm like, oh, shoots, right?
Yeah.
And so that got my attention. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he said, Tiffany, I never forget, we were in Dallas at a family reunion. He says, you need to get your life together. You cannot die. And you have to take care of your girls. And so that was kind of like a slap in the face, wake up call. And so after that, I didn't necessarily jump right on it. But as I kind of advanced in my career, I was like, I cannot not be in shape. I cannot not take care of myself if I'm trying to lead people. Like, you can't lead if you're not leading and taking care of your temple, you know? So I work out daily. I created a blog about my working out. I speak to that and I try to encourage, especially women, because we need to take care of ourselves. I think sometimes you have some individuals, they'll just be like, I'm going on vacation, bye. Some of us, I can't leave for whatever reason. But every now and then, leave early on a half day on a Friday, fly out of the state, go put your head on a pillow. Don't do nothing. Just sleep and come back and just imagine how good you feel, right? You know, I work out every morning, whether I run on the bike, yoga, whatever. It's just my stress relief.
That's awesome.
Just to come back and give. Yeah. And so I think we give, but we don't refill our cups. And so that's my way to refill and take care of myself as I take care of others, you know?
You know, I wish I would have heard this some time ago, because I would heed that advice and double down on your advice to others out there who might be listening, because it's so true.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And I think the public has takes the superintendent for granted. You know, it's a position that unfortunately it's almost like a throwaway position for many out there. But it's a really difficult job. And I know you're doing a fantastic job there, and they're really lucky to have you there. You know, I got to ask this question, and I apologize for asking it in some sense, but it's important because I think, like I said, you not only are just a great superintendent, great educator, and obviously now just a great advocate of individual health and so forth, but you're, there's not many female superintendents out there. And out of the, you know, over 1,000 school districts out there in the state of Texas alone, you're one of the, you know, certainly one of the bright, you know, shining lights. How has it been as a female, not only that, but also African-American, you know, superintendent to navigate the superintendency? You know, what is that to you? And, you know, and is it, how does that feel? Is it challenging? Do you have to, are you conscious of that? You know, and how does that work in your world, in your perspective?
Okay. Funny that you asked that question. So side note, I blog, and one of the promises I made to myself, but I did it publicly, so I did it, is I blogged about my first year as a superintendent. So I'm in year two, about to wrap up two, but I still blog every month. And this month's blog, I literally just posted, which is so ironic that you asked the question. I just posted this past weekend, and I talk about being the first and being the first African-American sometimes, or sometimes being the first female, or sometimes being the first in both. And so in the blog, I talk about my first high school principalship that I mentioned earlier. I was the first principal of color in that district, 2014. And I talk about the fact that people are like, oh my gosh, how cool. And yes, I was excited. I was honored, all those things. But at the same time, it was kind of like, wait a minute, it's 2014. How was that possible? And so I kind of share a little bit about that experience. And then even coming here, it's not a secret. I am the first African-American administrator, superintendent, if you will. I'll probably say administrator. And so it's a fact. And even when I interviewed in my board, I'm very transparent. They're all white, one woman, six men, and then there's me, right? And so in my community, everybody knows my car, and everybody knows me. Like, I can't hide. And so it's comical, but it's one of those like
And they know where you live too, by the way.
Yeah, they do. Like they'll knock and say, "Hey, I'm here. I brought you a cake." And I'm like, "Wait, what? You know here?" Like that. Yeah. So yeah, true story. But it's cute. Anytime. I love it. Right? But it's one of those to where I believe that when you are a person of color, and when you are a woman or both, you're held to a higher standard. And some people might not agree with me. And I even say that in my blog. I was like, you might not. I said, but this is my perception. My perception is this. If I'm the first African-American ever in this seat, in this district, or pick a different district, I have to be exemplary in my work. Because if I'm not, the door will not open for another African-American. I know that for a fact. Yeah. And so one of the things I shared in the blog was that, like, that district that I mentioned previously, they have a diverse pool of principals and different leaders, and they're of different, you know, racial identities. And so that wasn't a thing pre-me. And so I'm not saying it's because of me by any means, but I'm saying I know I had to operate in excellence so the door would not close for anybody else who happened to look like me. And so I don't take this work lightly, and I don't take the fact that I'm a Black woman lightly, because I know my white students are looking up at me. My African-American students are looking up at me, my Hispanic students, my parents, my seniors, silver seniors, that's my little group, like all the people, all the things, they're paying attention. And so I know I have to operate on all cylinders and make sure that work is great, because I don't want the door to close for someone else who may come after me. And so I take that so seriously. And again, people, I'll argue anybody down on that one, just because that's just been my experience. Yeah. And it's hard. I think I might even project some of that stress on myself because I think through those things, and other people might not have to think through those things. But I think they're important to be mindful of, because I want to make sure that door stays open for people who want to sit in this seat. So,
how heavy of a burden, you know, is that, you think, though? I mean, that's a huge weight, don't you think?
It is. I think I kind of, some people might say I put it on myself. And some people might say, no, that's a true burden, because I feel it too, you know. I feel like I'm called to do this work. And I believe I can. And that's why Crazy Here gets up at 4:30, 4:45 every morning to work out. So I don't come to work stressed or burdened. That's my release to be like, okay, let it go. Yes, you got this hearing coming up, or you got this whatever or whatever. Pick a topic, right? Because every day is different. Yeah. But when I come to work, I'm ready. And the pressure, it's there, but I don't pay attention to it. I just do the job and do what I know to do, because it's the right thing to do. And I'm like, let the rest take care of itself. Yeah. You know, so it can be a burden if you let it, but I think it's a blessing, because I get the opportunity to do those things and represent, you know?
Now, I think a lot of folks don't understand that as a minority, even, you know, obviously in our case, you had to prove this in the public setting, you know, in perhaps in other situations, it's not so public that you may have to prove it. But, you know, you're in the eyes of the public, whether you go to the grocery store, you're driving in your car. So you're constantly under that burden of pressure, or pressure of burden. And that's that takes a toll, is what I would say. And the fact that you're doing it with a smile on your face on a day-to-day basis, and your enthusiasm, like I said, there is a lesson here to be learned from you. There's no doubt, no doubt. I know we spent a lot of time, and I promised you about 37 minutes. So we're down to the end here. We got to end on a good note, a funny note, hopefully. So this show is called Lunch Duty. And I think that all administrators or educators, for that matter, have done lunch duty in their career. And I'm sure you still do it now. Any funny stories about any lunch duty out there when you're a high school principal or middle school principal at Ridgeview? and other places that you may have, or even now? I mean, what great lunch duty stories do you have?
Oh, okay. That's, I wasn't ready for that. And I should have been, hence the title, right? I don't have a funny story, but I will tell you that I appreciate lunches. So just last week, first of all, we had to cancel school because we had tornadoes, warnings, all that stuff. It's crazy. Like, being in Southeast Texas, it's unique for me. That's very different. But I think the next day or the day before, I can't remember, I'm in the cafeteria and I'm meeting with my student ambassadors, but I'm also trying to go check on my babies and just say hi. This is elementary. And so I was looking for one student in particular just to say hi and just say, hey, I was going to give you a message, you know, from another adult. And I never made it to her because, hi, Dr. Spicer, hug. Hi, Dr. Spicer, who are you? Are you the superintendent? Hi, Dr. Spicer, like all that. So I never made it to where I was going. So that's kind of like the life, especially with elementary. And then every now and then I do serve in the cafeterias in our schools. And every time, it never fails. Some are like, so who are you? And I'm like, No, let me phrase. Are you the new lunch lady? And I was like, today I am. I'm helping, you know. And other kids are just like, that's Dr. Spicer, you know. So it's just comical. But the small things go so far. And for me, it's 30 minutes, sometimes an hour, because I'll stay through multiple lunches of my time. But that impact, it's priceless. Yep. So when I get to work in the cafeteria in my high school, now they give me grief. In junior high, they give me grief, but it's so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so yes, lunch duty.
It is. You know what? I will say I miss a lot of things. I don't miss a lot of things, but lunch duty or spending time with kids during lunchtime was fantastic. I loved it. And I love hanging out with them. I used to make pancakes in the morning during February.
We did that in Round Rock,
Yeah, we made pancakes for all the kids in the morning of each of the high schools, giving away pancakes. It was always fun to do something like that. So, I appreciate you sharing that. It brings me a smile to my face, no doubt.
Yes.
Listen, we've taken up an enormous amount of time. I appreciate you. You're fantastic. I can't wait to come out and see you and get a tour of Buena ISD. I want to get a baseball hat from Buena High School as well. See how you can hook me up with that.
Got you covered.
And, if there's anything I can do to help you, of course, let me know. And I just appreciate you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for this honor. I'm truly honored to be a part. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And listen, you take care and God bless. All right. Talk to you soon.
All right. You too. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Lunch Duty is produced by David Yeager and me, Andrew Kim. We thank the Lates Development Studio and the Texas Behavioral Science and Policy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin for their support. Thank you for listening, and please join us for our next episode of Lunch Duty.